Call this meeting of the House State Affairs Committee to order. The time is 3:20 on Saturday, March 28th, 2026, and we're here in room 120. Please remember to silence cell phones. Our members present today include Representative Vance, Representative Holland, Representative Hinshute, Vice Chair Story, and myself, Chair Carrick. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Our record secretary is Cecilia Miller, and our moderator from the Juno LIO is Renzo Moises. Our committee aide for today's hearing is my staff, Stuart Relay. Thank you all for being here and for helping us out on a Saturday. We have two items on today's agenda. We'll be doing introductory hearings on two bills relating to daylight savings time. The first will be SB 26 from Senator Merrick. Thank you for joining us. And the second is House Bill 229 from Representative Holland. I'm also just going to note for anybody listening and for others in the room that we have a planned hearing on the third bill and the only other bill in the legislature related to this topic for this upcoming week. And my intention is to hear introductory presentations on each of the versions of this issue that are available for the legislature's consideration, and then to potentially come back going forward to the versions. So today we have two introductory hearings, and we're going to start with Senate Bill 26, which is from Senator Merrick. So I'd like to invite Senator Merrick and her staff, Carrie Crocker, to the table to please go ahead and put yourselves on the record and proceed with your introduction.
Oops. Good afternoon, Chair Carrick and members of the House State Affairs Committee. For the record, I am Senator Kelly Merrick, proud to represent District L in Chugiak and Eagle River. I'm joined today by my staff member, Carrie Crocker. Thank you for this opportunity to present Senate Bill 26. Now, this is not a new issue. It's one we've heard about year after year from Alaskans in every corner of our state. Parents, teachers, small business owners, folks just trying to get their kids to school on time or adjust their schedules twice a year. And what they're telling us is simple. They're tired of changing the clocks. They're tired of the disruption, tired of the confusion, tired of a system that no longer seems to serve the people it was meant to help. And the truth is, this legislature has been listening. Over the years, we've seen bill after bill, more than 20 since the 21st legislature, all trying to solve the same problem. So the question is, why haven't we gotten it done? Well, the answer is just as simple. We haven't lacked ideas, we've lacked agreement. Because while many Alaskans want to end daylight saving time, there are real concerns. Concerns about falling out of sync with the rest of the country, about being 5 hours behind the East Coast and 2 hours behind the West Coast. Concerns that affect commerce, travel, and communication. Those concerns do matter. That's why Senate Bill 26 takes a different approach. It doesn't ignore those concerns, it addresses them. This bill gives us a path forward, a practical path, a path that reflects not just what we want, but what we can achieve. It ends the biannual clock change, something Alaskans have made clear that they want, and at the same time, it petitions the federal government to consider a transition to Pacific Standard Time, helping ensure we remain connected to the economic and logistical rhythms of the West Coast. Now, around this building, Madam Chair, we often say that legislation is the art of the possible. Well, this is what that looks like. Not a perfect solution for everyone, but a workable solution for Alaska. You may hear that the provision in this bill is a poison pill, but I would suggest it's something different entirely. It's the bridge that gets us to yes. It's the piece that brings together the votes we need, not to just talk about to change, but to finally make it. And why now? Because the moment is here. We have an administration at the state level that has supported this idea before. We have a federal partner that has expressed a willingness to listen. And most importantly, we have a public that is ready. Ready for consistency, ready for predictability, ready for a system that makes sense in their daily lives. Alaska is different. Our size, our geography, our way of life. They make decisions like this more than just technical. They make them personal. Time here isn't just about clocks. It's about the way we live. And Senate Bill 26 is about bringing a little more stability to that life. So let's take this step, let's move forward, and let's give Alaskans the consistency they've been asking for. With that, Madam Chair, my staff member Carrie Crocker is available to walk through the bill and answer any questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Merrick. And we'll go to your staff just to walk through the details of SB 26.
For the record, Carrie Crocker, staff to Senator Merrick. I can roll through the sectional. Section 1 exempts the state of Alaska from the observation of daylight savings time. Section 2 of the bill directs the Alaska State Legislature to formally petition the United States Department of Transportation to move the entire state to Alaska Pacific time. It also requests that USDOT initiate proceedings under the Uniform Time Act of 1966, following the procedural requirements for changing time zones. Section 3 states that Section 1, the exemption from daylight savings time, will only take effect if the USDOT places the entire state of Alaska on the Pacific Standard Time on or before 2035. Section 4 provides that Section 2, which initiates the petition to USDOT, takes effect immediately upon the passage of the Act. And Section 5 specifies that if Section 1, the exemption from daylight saving time, takes effect, it will do so on the effective date of the placement of Alaska into Pacific Standard Time.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker. Do we have initial questions for the bill sponsor or staff? Vice Chair Story?
Thank you, Chair Carrick. Through the chair, thank you, Senator Merrick, for being here, and Mr. Crocker. I was curious about a comment you made in your public testimony. You had said that we had an administration that supported Senate Bill 26, and I was wondering if I had understood that correctly. I know our governor has a very high veto threshold on issues of policy that he might not be in favor of. And so my question was, have you talked to the administration, and what feedback have you gotten on this bill?
Thank you, Senator Merrick, District L, for the record, through the chair to Vice Chair Story. Thank you for that question. I have not spoken directly with the administration. However, Governor Dunleavy did co-sponsor this same legislation in the 29th legislature. As for the federal administration, when Secretary Sean Duffy was in Alaska in August of 2025, this bill was brought forward to him, and he said he would absolutely give it a close look when it reached his desk.
Thank you. Follow up.
And
this is another question having to do with the time frame. I'm a little confused about the time frame. And when I look at the effective date, through the chair, Senator Merrick, if you could help me understand that better. It says you have a long effective date there. I don't know if this was adopted, could you help me understand how the process would work?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Story, what the bill does is allows until 2035 for USDOT to make their determination. So the bill would not effectively go into effect until USDOT made their determination. So no change would happen until USDOT had their process, which in their process is they'll go around the state and have public meetings, take input, and at that point, they'll have a final ruling of whether we can go to Pacific time. So the whole bill hinges on whether or not DOT moves us to Pacific time.
Follow up.
Thank you, through the chair. And I'm really understanding why that is such a far out time process.
Through the chair, Representative Story, I think we just wanted to allow that much time for DOT to do it. It's estimated to take up to a year. And I think with the current administration, it's possible that it could take a year or 6 months. But in the past, in other jurisdictions, other states, it's taken multiple years.
Follow up.
Follow-up.
So through the chair, just for clarification then, so you've given this long time date, but technically you want the process to start right away, and if they act earlier, that is your expectation?
Through the chair, Representative Story, yes, that is the expectation. And I think given the circumstances where we had the opportunity to talk with the secretary, yes, so we expect that would happen reasonably quick.
Thank you.
Representative Himshoot, just trying to see who asked questions.
Thank you, through the chair. I am slow to start this Saturday. What is the advantage of moving us to Pacific time? So we have the bill does a couple of things, and one of the things is not necessarily connected to taking us off of the time change. Rather, it puts our whole state in Pacific time. What's the value of that? Why would I want that for my constituents?
Thank you. For the record, Senator Kelly Merrick, District L, through the chair to Representative Himshoot, there has been significant opposition from organizations like travel, the financial districts, that have a real concern about being 5 hours from the East Coast and 2 hours from the West Coast. So this bill is sort of a compromise for the folks that want to get rid of daylight savings, but it also puts us on Pacific Standard Time so that we would only be away from the East Coast for 3 hours for part of the year and 4 hours for part of the year, never 5 hours. And for your area here in Southeast, it gives extra daylight for the tourism industry to flourish.
Follow up.
Thank you. I know this is a very, through the chair, people are very intrigued and energized by this issue. For people who follow it really closely, I'm not one of those people. So I want to make a good and informed decision. I can't say I've taken a deep dive. Can you talk more about the impacts of your bill for Southeast Alaska versus Western Alaska? What would be different for those two, you know, previously four time zones apart areas of the state?
Through the chair to Representative Himshoot, I think the big thing with Alaskans that I've spoken with, and you are correct, Alaskans are passionate about this issue.
Very.
Whether it's staying on standard time or moving to permanent daylight savings time, I think the folks that I've spoken to just want to stop the switch. And that's really what...
That's the camp I'm in, through the chair. And so I'm like, let's just... We could throw a dart at a dartboard and pick one of the various methods, and I'd probably be fine with it. I'm just tired of the switch.
Correct. Through the chair to Representative Himshoot, I completely agree with that. I would be happy if any of the bills for this pass the legislature this session. However, I'm a firm believer that this is the only bill that will get support amongst legislators throughout the state. In fact, our cross-sponsor, Representative Foster from our northernmost districts, are supporting this. And, you know, I think when I look back to the 20 other bills that have been filed, it's overwhelmingly bipartisan support for, co-sponsors, cross-sponsors, those that supported the bill and those who didn't. So I would say that you really, that again, this is the art of the possible. This is the compromise that can actually take a step forward. And it's the only way we're going to actually get something done. Is it 100% sure that DOT will approve it? No. But I think if there's a time that DOT will, it's now.
Okay, follow up.
I
want to go back to my original question. Sorry, I kind of broadsided with a few questions there. What would the impact of your bill be on Southeast Alaska versus Western Alaska?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Himshoot, SB 26 creates a pathway to align Alaska more closely with the West Coast. So, I mean, for Southeast, I think the changes would be relatively minimal, and you would see benefits. Tourism is a particularly Alaska is often 1 or 2 hours behind key markets, reducing that overlap. Increase the shared business hours and give us more time communication, real-time communications. And we've seen support from tourism, aviation, shipping, and those issues. So Western Alaska, it's the effect, you know, could be somewhat negative. I mean, I think you're going to hear for sure today about some of the health issues. So I don't have a great answer of, I mean, besides stopping the clock change for Western Alaska, I think that's the main benefit that I can see. And of course, if there's some financial institutions that are in that area, they're going to benefit from it as well.
And through the chair to Representative Hemshoot, I think it's important to remember that our northern position on the globe, in the winter, it's dark when we go to work and it's dark when we go home. And it's light in the summer when we go to work and when we go home. So the amount of daylight, especially like in Chair Carrick's district, when we change our clocks, the amount of sunlight changes so rapidly that it's within a week or two, where you'll see a chart, I believe, that Miami, it takes 40 days. So our amount of light transition is so quick, I think it will not make that much of an impact as far as the kind of the health issues and things that have been discussed.
Final follow-up?
Yeah, I'm going to be curious about those health issues, and I just guess it's important for me to comment for any of my constituents who might happen upon me saying that I don't care what we do as long as we do something. The reason for that is it feels like the impacts of what we do or don't do is within basically a two-week time span around the equinox, because we're flooded with dark and we're flooded with light the rest of the year. And so, and that might be belying my ignorance. Maybe there's something I'm missing in that, but I know from my own experience, changing the clock, it doesn't really matter because eventually it's just light all the time. And then eventually it's just dark all the time. So, I'm curious to hear more when I have heard things about mental health impacts and physical health impacts of the time change. I'm curious how many of those studies were done in extreme, probably not extreme southern, but extreme northern latitudes because of our, I guess, extremes. So it feels like a lot of those studies are centered in the lower 48.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Hemshoot. I will note that former Representative Dan Ortiz carried similar legislation for many years, and we have heard from the Ketchikan City Council that they are very supportive of SB 26.
Okay, thanks.
I'll add myself to the queue. So I see this graphic from Alaska Survey Research in here that 57% of Alaskans prefer daylight savings time, 28% prefer standard time. I have some basic questions. Is daylight savings time aligned with Pacific time?
Alas, thank you, Madam Chair. Pacific Standard Time is the same as Alaska Daylight Savings Time.
Okay. And just as a follow-up, Pacific Time is just 1 hour ahead of Alaska?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, I'm going to hold the rest of my questions for a few minutes. Do we have additional questions before Vice Chair Story? And then after Vice Chair Story, we'll go to, looks like the invited testimony who's online, and then we'll open up public testimony.
Thank you, Chair Carrick, through the chair. My question has to do with, concerns people do have about our changing light and how we were keeping it darker in the morning. And I was wondering, through your constituency in Anchorage, you know, their thought about the more darkness in the morning versus, I know, again, there's more light in the afternoon for after school, but how about concerns about safety, public health, and being off our natural rhythms of our sleep cycles?
Thank you. Through the chair, Vice Chair Story. I think it's important to remember we gain and lose daylight so quickly that the number of days that you will be going to school and work in the dark are minimal. It changes so quickly. And the people that I've spoken to about this issue, again, Chair Carrick mentioned the 57 or 58% that prefer daylight savings. I think when they were asked a question, they responded one way or the other, but really people just want to stop changing their clocks. Health benefit wise, there's you know, there'll be conflicting ideas about that. For me personally, when we switched the clocks forward, I had a hard time sleeping for a week. And I don't think it had anything to do with light or darkness, because my bedroom's always dark. It just had to do with the interruption of my sleep cycle. So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't see any additional. Oh, Representative Vance.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking at the prior Senate bill that actually moved across. And I want to say, Senator Merrick, I consider your Senate bill moving past the Senate a significant achievement, because in 20 years, there's not very many that did. So thank you for that. But it looks like you've really done your homework, because the last bill that moved, that ended up dying in the House, was Senate Bill 6, and it was it kept daylight savings time permanent. And this flips it to what at that time the majority of Alaskans wanted. So it looks like you've responded to the last conversation about this, of what Alaskans are preferring, what industry is preferring. And this one, to me, I think is a great compromise, because by having us just stay where we are and then, you know, work with our federal partners to make that communication with the public is key, because my community especially really loves to be involved in the process and feel like they can contribute to this significant change in their life, because it feels like when we have to make that time change, the school days are impacted, traffic's impacted, health is impacted, just because we feel like we've had an hour sucked out of our lives that we can't get back. So I just want to say thank you, you know, for responding. But for the committee, it was in this committee that the last Senate bill died in 2022, Senate Bill 6. And the concerns were much of the ones that we're raising now, but it was the opposite. It was making us permanently on daylight savings time. And people just said, I don't know. There was just a lot of consternation. So I love that this bill flipped the script and has what I can see so far, more support and engagement from Alaskans. So I see that as a positive. This is the most hope I've had on any one of the daylight savings bills. And hopefully we will be that historic legislature that passes the bill that can set us all on the right path. So I just wanted to provide that little bit of history for us in as we're deliberating, you know, what's the right path on this, is to look back at the prior conversations that the legislatures had, because we don't have to reinvent the wheel on this, and we can lean on that history. And I just want to say thank you for responding to all of that prior work.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Vance, I appreciate that feedback. And it's interesting that Eagle River is very passionate about this issue. That Senate Bill 6 was brought forward by former Senator McKinnon, who is also from the Eagle River District.
So at this time, let's go ahead and go to the invited testimony. And I misspoke earlier. We're going to do public testimony on both bills noticed today simultaneously. And my committee aide just informed me of that. So we're going to go to our invited testimony, and I would just ask invited testifiers to please try to contain your testimony to about 5 minutes. First, we have online Everett Masterman from Alaska Survey Research. And Mr. Masterman, if you could put yourself on the record and please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Kerrick. My name is, and members of the House State Affairs Committee. My name is Everett Masterman. I'm a researcher for Alaska Survey Research. I grew up in Fairbanks. I actually have lived in your district, Chair Kerrick, for most of my life, and graduated from UAF with a master's in statistics, but I currently live in Anchorage. Along with our partner company, the Mallory Daniels and Associates, Alaska Survey Research provides research, strategic planning, and policy support to Alaska organizations. And we're based in Anchorage with 12 team members. part of my role is to lead quantitative research for surveys of lessons. And that means designing questions, programming, fielding, and analysis of the data we receive. We have a number of surveys going at any given time. We have more in particular this summer. This gives us the ability to add bonus questions we think might be interesting. So last weekend, we decided to add a few questions about daylight savings time to our ongoing survey in the hopes that this might inform the policymaking process. Now, it's my understanding we've already shared the data with the members of this committee, and I was asked to briefly walk through our methodology and results. Before I do that, though, I do want to be very clear that Alaska Survey Research doesn't have a position on the pending legislation. We're just happy to be a resource to help inform the decision-making process. This survey was fielded with a mixture of text online and panel distribution. So that means that we texted 55,000 random Alaskan phone numbers, and then we used the Alaska Survey Research email panel to fill in the gaps on demographic groups that were underrepresented from the text response, and also to get to our desired sample size of 1,500. And the data is also weighted to be representative of the Alaska population on variables like age, area in which people live, race, gender, education level, party affiliation, and the 2024 vote for president. So we asked two questions on this survey relevant to daylight savings time. The first one was, do you support changing Alaska time to be the same all year round? So that's, you know, essentially stop changing our clock. And the options here were strongly support, mildly opposed, strongly opposed, and no opinion. And the response that we got from people on that was that 63.5% of our respondents strongly supported changing Alaska time to be the same all year round, and 14.5% mildly supported that. And that question was asked of all our respondents. We also had a follow-up question only for the respondents who didn't oppose changing Alaska time to be the same all year round, and there were 1,457 of them. And so those respondents were given a description of permanent daylight saving time and permanent standard time, and then we asked them their preference, and they could respond that they strongly preferred permanent daylight saving time, mildly preferred permanent daylight saving time, mildly preferred permanent standard time, strongly preferred permanent standard time, or that they had no opinion. We also used a split sample on this question. That means there were two versions of the question. On the first version, we described the permanent daylight saving time first and had it first in the answer options. And on the second version, we described permanent standard time first and had it first in the answer options. And the reason for having that split is just to reduce the response, any response order bias you might see. If you combine the data from both of those versions of the question, 57.8% of respondents said that they would prefer permanent daylight saving time, and 27.6% said that they would prefer a permanent standard time, and the rest had no opinion. There's a lot of data here. If anyone wants to contact me outside this process, I'm happy to respond. And the Alaska Survey Research has also just put out a full report on this data, available on our website, alaskasurveyresearch.com. And with that, I would like to thank you for the invitation to share this hot off the press data from Alaska, and I'll be happy to stick around and answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Masterman. We do have a question for you from Representative Holland.
Great, thank you. Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Masterman, I know in the methods here that this polling topic is really hard to do. I've been involved in a couple of them, and it is super easy to figure out after the fact that that the way questions are asked can have different impacts on what people understand about daylight savings time. And in your option A, option B, between whether somebody preferred standard time or daylight savings time, my understanding is the differentiator there was whether people wanted to be closer or further away from lower 48 time. It seems like that would be a question that would probably enter into some bias, because I think people would be biased to be closer to the lower 48 if you gave them the choice of closer or further. Who would say we want to be further away, generically? So I'm curious why you selected that differentiator and what testing you might have done to be able to determine that that was going to be a pretty neutral way to differentiate preference between one time preference versus the other.
All right. Through the chair, Representative Holland. Thank you. That's a great question. So you're absolutely right that this is a very difficult thing to survey on because it is an issue that you do need to do a lot of informing people about when you ask the question. And so when we gave people the description of the two different time zones, we included two pieces of information. The first one was about whether the sun would rise earlier and set earlier or rise later and set later. And the second one was about whether we would be closer or farther from the lower 48 in terms of our time zone. And we thought both of those were relevant considerations for people to make their own decision. We put a lot of effort into trying to make this question as unbiased as possible, which is why we used that split sample. But it is indeed very possible that if you ask this question a different way, you might get a different result.
Just a quick follow-up.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you for that. Did you do any testing of this question to ascertain its neutrality?
Through the chair, Representative Holland, we did not do any testing of this question, although it's hard to see how you would test the question without having a sort of established neutral or control question to ask and compare to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions for Mr. Masterman, I think, thank you, Mr. Masterman, for your testimony. And if you'd like to just stay online for a while, we can make sure committee members are able to let me know if they'd like to ask further questions. And at this time, we're going to go to Jillian Simpson, who is the president and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Ms. Simpson, thank you for joining us in House State Affairs. If you could please put yourself on the record and begin your invited testimony.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Carrick and members of the committee. For the record, I am Jillian Simpson, president and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. ATIA represents over 640 members across the state who work in tourism. ATIA has long opposed eliminating daylight savings time due to the negative impacts it would have on our industry. However, I am here today to express our support for SB 26, which would move Alaska to Pacific Standard Time year-round, or as previously mentioned, effectively keeping Alaska as staying on daylight savings time. This approach offers a practical solution to the inconvenience of changing clocks twice a year while preserving the long summer evenings that Alaska's travel industry depends on. More than 3 million visitors traveled to Alaska last year, contributing $5.6 billion to the state's economy and supporting 48,000 jobs. Notably, 88% of those visits occur between May and September, meaning many tourism businesses must earn the majority of their annual income within just a five-month window. As the land of the midnight sun, Alaska's extended summer daylight is a critical asset. Preserving as much evening light as possible is essential for maximizing business activity and economic opportunity across the state. We understand that changing the clocks twice a year is disruptive and unpopular, and we recognize why there is interest in ending it. However, until SB 26 came along, the proposed solution was to eliminate daylight savings time and put Alaska on permanent standard time. ATIA has strongly opposed doing so because it would shift valuable evening daylight into the very early morning hours, sometimes as early as 3 a.m., where it has little practical benefit. Visitors are not interested in starting activities that early, so that extra morning light would go largely unused. But more importantly, losing an hour of evening daylight would significantly impact tourism-related businesses that depend on usable daylight. These are sightseeing operators, golf courses, flight-seeing companies, and air taxi services who would all face shorter operating windows if darkness arrived earlier. This would force them to cut back on tours and transportation, reducing both revenue and employment opportunities. Our members already work carefully to make the most of available daylight, especially as days begin to shorten in August and September. Many have reported to us that they schedule their operations right up until dusk, whether that means returning a day cruise to the dock just before dark or completing a flight seeing tour at the last possible moment. Losing even 1 hour of evening light would make some of these tours unworkable, leading to canceled offerings, lost income, and diminished visitor experiences. And while the effects would be especially pronounced in Southeast Alaska, this is truly a statewide concern, impacting tourism businesses as far north as Denali and the Arctic. Further, adopting permanent standard time in Alaska would effectively place the state 2 time zones behind Seattle and the rest of the West Coast. This gap would make it difficult for Alaska-based businesses to coordinate with partners and markets in those regions. But the impact would extend beyond communication logistics. Cruise ship itineraries, which are carefully timed, would also be affected. To stay on schedule for returning to their home ports, ships would need to shorten their stop at Alaska's final port of call. That reduction in time ashore would mean fewer opportunities for passengers to book excursions, dine locally, or shop, ultimately leading to lost revenue for tour operators, restaurants, and retail businesses that depend on cruise visitors. However, SB 26 is an elegant solution. It offers a practical and well-balanced approach to these challenges. It eliminates the need to change the clock twice a year while preserving the current summertime schedule that Alaska's tourism industry depends on. By adopting Pacific Standard Time year-round, Alaska can maintain valuable evening daylight during peak tourism months, benefiting both residents and businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Simpson. Do we have questions for Ms. Simpson? Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, through the chair. Thanks for joining us today on a Saturday afternoon. The discussions, Ms. Simpson, that we've had before about trying to grow Alaska's year-round tourism industry just leads me to ask one clarifying question. You know, this change, if we go to a permanent Pacific Standard Time or permanent daylight savings time, is kind of the same thing. But what's your view of how this affects winter tourism that we're trying to grow, as we try and actually grow the overall tourism industry throughout the year?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Holland. That is a great question. And to be honest with you, before we ever took a position on SB 26, we did poll our membership, in particular winter tourism operators, because we wanted to better understand what the impact would be. And for all of them, I think there were like many Alaskans there. They just support not having to change the clock on the winter time. And in fact, most of those winter operators are definitely Aurora driven. So this legislation will work fine for them.
Thank you. And again, thank you, Ms. Simpson, for testifying. If you'd like to stay on the line, we would open up the opportunity later for members to come back and ask further questions. And for both of our invited testifiers, if you do have to go, no worries. We can follow back up in the future. So at this time, we are, again, just for the public listening online, we are combining testimony on Senate Bill 26 and House Bill 229. So at this time, we are going to switch to our next bill on the agenda. And I will open public testimony simultaneously for both after we've begun the presentation of HB 229. Just want to thank Senator Merrick and her staff again for being here and answering questions. So at this time, we're going to take just a very brief at ease to transition to HB 229 from Representative Holland. At ease. House State Affairs is back on the record, and we are now ready to begin our presentation on House Bill 229. Thank you to Representative Holland and your staff, Aiden Nickel, and please feel free to begin your presentation.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Kai Holland, representative for House District 9. Chair Carrick and members of the State Affairs Committee, thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 229, a bill exercising existing state authority under the Federal Uniform Time Act to remain on Alaska Standard Time year-round, eliminating the clock change twice each year without federal petition or congressional approval. And thank you for holding the hearing today. A meeting on Saturday is a disruption to everyone's normal schedule, but in many ways that disruption of our normal schedules is exactly why we're here. Twice a year, all of us experience that same kind of disruption when we change our clocks. It's that shared experience that keeps bringing this issue back before the legislatures. not just here in Alaska, but across the United States and other countries, including British Columbia, Canada, that just ended their clock change like the Yukon has done previously. As I prepared for today, I chose to wear my grandfather's Native American bolo tie, which reflects a design inspired by the sun. It felt appropriate because while this discussion is about timekeeping, at its core, it's really about our relationship to the sun and how we organize our lives around it. Because in one sense, this issue is very simple. Nothing we do here will change the number of hours in a day. And we cannot legislate the sun to rise early or set later. All we can do is decide where we set the clock, when we have dinner, and how we plan our activities around the sunlight that there is in any one day. But in another sense, it's complex because that decision shapes how we live, work, and play. At its most basic level, time zones are a global coordination system. The map that you've got on the screens here shows how the Earth is divided into 24 time zones, each 1 hour apart, corresponding to the Earth's daily rotation. In a perfect system, each zone and the geography assigned to the zone, identified in this map by the different colors, would align so that noon corresponds to when the sun is highest in the sky in that zone. In reality, as you see, the boundaries bend and shift to reflect geography, communities, and economic and political connections. And that's where Alaska stands out. Our state spans nearly four natural time zones from east to west. If we followed solar alignment, Alaska would still be divided into multiple zones, just like the rest of our country. Instead, for the sake of coordination, we've chosen to operate largely under one single time zone. That choice makes life easier for scheduling, but it also means we're already living with a built-in compromise relative to the sun. That compromise became most visible in 1983 when Alaska consolidated from multiple time zones into one unified time zone across most of the state, exempting only the western Aleutian Islands. That decision wasn't about perfect alignment with the sun. It was about coordination, communication, and commerce, and it came with a trade-off. Today, most of Alaska is already 1 or 2 hours ahead of solar time. For example, in Anchorage, solar noon occurs about 1 p.m. during standard time. And I just want to draw your attention back to the map. If you look kind of in the center, you'll see that orange band. You'll see most of Alaska is in that band, whereas Southeast Alaska is also in that band shifted. Southeast Alaska is in standard time, and it's correctly aligned. And that's how it was originally set back in 1900. But over time, when we consolidate, we moved all of the core of Alaska into the time to the left there that you see over top of Southeast Alaska. So most of Alaska is already on an advanced time. So when we talk about shifting time, it's important to recognize we are shifted already. But that brings us to the economic dimension of this discussion. Time zones are not just about sunlight, they're about coordination. Some Alaskans and industries value an earlier start to the clock day, extending evening daylight, particularly for outdoor recreation and tourism. There's real value in having more usable light after traditional work hours, especially in a place known for the midnight sun. Others, particularly in finance, business, and logistics, value an earlier start, providing closer alignment with the lower 48. Being nearer to Pacific time increases overlap with West Coast business hours and supports coordination with national markets. Those are real benefits and they matter, but they're also choices, not necessities. If we followed geography alone, Alaska and Anchorage in particular would sit closer to 2 hours behind West Coast time. And yet economies do function successfully without closer alignment. Hawaii, for example, has operated for 60 years on standard time, 2 to 3 hours behind the West Coast without ever observing daylight savings time, with a strong visitor industry and family and economic ties to the U.S. and to Asia. More importantly, Alaska's future is not limited to the lower 48 and its three time zones to the east. We're uniquely positioned globally. From here, within a single workday, we can engage with Europe in the morning, the Americas during the day, and East Asia in the afternoon. Our key trading partners, Japan, Korea, and Taiwan, do not observe daylight savings time. Iceland, that we look to for economic ideas and tourism inspiration, does not shift its time, remaining 1 hour advanced year-round, like much of what Alaska would be if we enacted House Bill 229, leaving Alaska on standard time. Again, looking at the map, you'll see Alaska and its core shifted by an hour. And if you look it up and search a little bit, you'll find Iceland is in the very same way shifted, just like Alaska would be. So while time zones and economic connections matter, our future is not limited to aligning with the lower 48, but about exploring Alaska's broader place in the global economy. House Bill 229 represents a straightforward, practical step within our authority to address an issue that Alaskans have been discussing for decades and demanding we take action on. We can't change the sun, but like many persistent issues Alaska faces, I believe it's time for change and taking action now rather than hoping someone in the future will. So with that context, I look forward to additional information from my staff and our invited speakers and the discussion we'll have. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. For the record, Aiden Nickel, staff to Representative Holland. So before I begin, I just want to clarify that House Bill 229 puts us permanently on Alaska Standard Time. That's the time that we observe in the winter with more morning light. And there's a lot of nuance in this debate, a lot of opinions and strong feelings, but our arguments for this bill circle around just 2 points. First, the vast majority of Alaskans want to end the practice of changing our clocks twice a year. And passing a standard time bill rather than a daylight savings time bill is the only way that we can guarantee that the time change will actually stop, because this sort of bill requires no federal action. If we pass a daylight saving time bill, we will in all likelihood be changing our clocks for years to come as we wait for the federal government to act. The second important point is that standard time is much better for Alaskans' health. So this is polling from last summer that shows how deeply unpopular our biannual time change is. 3/4 of Alaskans, according to this poll, want to end the change. That's true of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. It's true here in Southeast. It's true in the interior. And holy cow, do folks on the Kenai Peninsula want to stop changing their clocks. And if we want to make this change that our constituents desire so strongly, there's only one way to guarantee it. So an oddity of federal law, the Uniform Time Act of 1966, allows states to unilaterally opt out of observing daylight savings time, that is, opt in to permanent standard time. But it does not allow states to unilaterally choose permanent daylight saving time. That requires either an act of Congress or the Federal Department of Transportation to change time zone boundaries. Since 2018, 19 states have tried to do this. All of them still change their clocks twice a year. So if we want to be sure to end the time change now, we have to go with permanent standard time. That's the root of House Bill 229. Our invited testimony is going to dive much deeper into the health impacts of permanent daylight saving time. But as Representative Holland explained earlier, most of Alaska already observes later sunrises and sunsets year-round. Even on standard time, solar noon in Anchorage is until 1 p.m., and it's past 2 p.m. in many parts of western Alaska. Daylight saving time pushes us even farther out of alignment with the sun, increasing Alaskans' risk of mental and physical health issues. Prominent health organizations agree that permanent standard time is detrimental to our health. And again, you'll hear more on this later from our invited testifiers. The provisions of HB 229 are very straightforward. Section 1 exempts the state from daylight saving time, and Section 2 sets an effective date of November 3rd of this year. That's the day after we fall back into standard time. It makes that fall time change permanent. So I will conclude by returning to what I believe are the most important pieces of this to keep in mind. First, permanent standard time is the only way for us to reliably end the practice of changing the clocks, which Alaskans desperately want. And second, permanent standard time is the better option for our health. Thank you, Chair Carrick, and we welcome the committee's questions.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Nickel and Representative Holland. And I do have initial questions from the committee before we go to invited testimony. Vice Chair Story.
Yes, thank you, Chair Carrick, through the chair. Thank you, Mr. Holland, Mr. Nichols, for your presentation today. My question is similar to what I asked Senator Merrick right away at the beginning, and that is talking to the administration. Have you had a chance to talk to the administration about your bill and any comments on that?
Great. Thank you. Through the chair, Vice Chair Story. No, I've not had any conversations with the administration on this bill. I don't know if there's anything else you're aware of from the administration on this.
Through the chair, Vice Chair Story, nothing that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
And I'm not seeing any further initial questions, so I think let's go ahead to our invited testifiers. And we'll also do public testimony right after that, just to make sure our public testifiers get heard right away. And then we will come back as time allows to further discussion on this bill. So I'd like to start with Kristen Mitchell, who is the past president of the Alaska State Medical Association and is joining us virtually today. Ms. Mitchell, if you could please put yourself on the record. And I understand you also have a presentation here that Mr. Nichols is going to change slides for you on in the room. If you say next slide, we'll go ahead and get that taken care of on our end. And thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cook. Just a sound check. Can you all hear me in the room?
We can. Thank you.
Okay. For the record, I'm Dr. Kristen Mitchell. I am the past president of the Alaska State Medical Association. I'm also board certified in internal medicine and sleep medicine. I'm a clinical professor at the University of Washington School of Medicine and the medical director of the Central Peninsula Hospital Sleep Laboratory. Next slide. As the past president of the Alaska State Medical Association, I just wanted to say thank you to Chair Carrick and the committee for requesting expert testimony. ASMA stands ready to help you all with scientific and medical information to help inform your citizen legislature decisions, and we hope that our testimony can help you make the best decisions in the interest of public health for all Alaskans. We have represented Alaska's physicians since territorial days, and we support the health and well-being of all Alaskans and support permanent standard time. Next slide, please. So why standard time? The human circadian clock is set by the sunlight, not by the clock on the wall. And when we shift to daylight savings time, that shifts the social clock, but it does not shift the biological clock. And our internal circadian timing stays locked to solar time. And studies have shown that that persists for months, even after that time change. So that circadian misalignment, where the internal clock and the social clock are out of sync, increases the risk of cardiovascular disease, of metabolic syndrome, of obesity and type 2 diabetes, of depression and mood disorders, and of reduced immune function. Next slide, please. Alaska is especially vulnerable to this circadian misalignment. We already sit at the western edge of our time zone, which is the worst position for circadian health. On average, people who live on the western edge of a time zone get about 19 minutes less sleep per night compared to people who live on the eastern edge of a time zone, which is really a significant change in the amount of rest that people get. The extreme seasonal light variation that we experience in Alaska, Anchorage data would be 5.5 hours to 19.5 hours, is found nowhere else in the United States. And we already lead the nation in our youth suicide rates. We are 3 times the U.S. national average. And between 9% and 19% of Alaskans meet full criteria for seasonal affective disorder, which is substantially more than the 1% to 3% nationally. So we're at a higher risk for mental health effects of time changes. Next slide, please. The daylight savings time transitions cause measurable harm, and I just wanted to review some of the data that's available. The spring forward transition, so that transition that we have just experienced, in a Michigan 4-year study published in 2014, was the Monday after that transition was associated with a 24% increase in heart attacks. And I will say the cardiovascular evidence is somewhat mixed at a population level. There was a more recent study from JAMA from 2025 that did not show that strong of a signal. I would say that that study was a cath lab-based study, so patients who had presented for a percutaneous intervention like a stent or angiography, and the population that gets to the cath lab had to survive their heart attack in order to get there and be part of the study. So people who did not survive their heart attack in transit, who died at home, would not have been seen in that study. And there was a question earlier about has the data been analyzed for northern populations? And the data that we have from Scandinavia, so Sweden and Finland, show that there is a measurable signal for increased risk of heart attacks after the daylight savings time transition in the spring. Other things that we're worried about, I mentioned that our mental health risks are higher here in Alaska. The spring transition is associated with a greater than 6% increase in suicide rate at the time of the transition. And then we haven't really talked about car crashes, but nationwide data suggests that there's a 6% increase in fatal car crashes in that first work week after spring forward transitions. That rate goes up to 8% when we think about the western edge of a time zone. Next slide. So because of these significant public health risks, there's a strong, clear medical consensus supporting permanent standard time. And the organizations involved include the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, that updated a position statement in 2024, and that updated position statement is endorsed by 20 medical organizations, including the American Medical Association, that has a House of Delegates policy from 2022, which is formal national policy supporting permanent standard time. The Alaska State Medical Association has reviewed this data and took a vote this year at the Board of Directors to support permanent standard time. The Sleep Research Society is in support of this, and the European Union is currently actively debating moving to permanent standard time as well because of the health risks. Next slide, please. So in conclusion, expert opinions would support permanent standard time. Alaska, because of our western time zone position, partly related to that 1983 time zone compression and our extreme seasonal light variation, mean that we are particularly vulnerable to circadian misalignment. And HB 229 would align Alaska law with current medical and scientific consensus. And I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Mitchell. And do we have any questions for Ms. Mitchell? I have one too. I'll go to Representative Holland first.
Okay, thanks. This is Kai Holland through the chair. I wonder if we can come back to the data that exists. It's been repeatedly brought to my attention that because we are so far north that a lot of the comparisons don't really work anymore because it is dark so much or light so much that the amount of time where there's actually a measurable impact on somebody's normal day is pretty minor. And I wonder if you could share if there's any more clarity on the sleep impacts at northern latitudes. I think it's all pretty clear that the time change itself is disruptive. So I just want to focus in on the impact of the circadian misalignment in northern latitudes, if there's more data that helps us clarify that, yes, it still matters even in the far north.
So Alaska's population is relatively small, so we don't have any Alaska-specific data that I am aware of related to this. I would say that maybe the most parallel that I'm aware of is the Scandinavian data. So looking at data from Finland and data from Sweden, where they have whole country health registries, and they were looking particularly at mental health and the suicide rate being higher in those related to the transition. There is a lot of concern about insufficient sleep contributing to poor mental health. And so if people are losing an hour of sleep with the transition, that's definitely a mental health concern.
A follow-up.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. I was not going to, but I decided I want to kind of get back to it. The comments you just made really kind of focus in on the transition again. And I think we're all kind of pretty clear that the transition itself is disruptive. But outside of the transition, so if we were to pick one time zone or another and we eliminated the transition, is there anything that helps us understand the impact in northern latitudes of just simply being long-term shifted 1 hour further off of a normal circadian solar mean time? And it may be that the data is not there, but I'm just curious, leaving aside the transition data.
So through the chair, Representative Holland, there is some heterogeneity in the data and some debate, and there a lot of it has focused on the transition. In terms of the heart attack data, I had mentioned that the 2025 study that was done in the lower 48 at urban centers, that was looking, you know, again at transition, and didn't see a change there. I'm going to have to say I don't know of data that is crystal clear about the difference between northern latitudes, but I think the data on western aspects of the time zone is quite clear. And so I would say that's the data that we have more information about.
Thanks. Thank you, Representative Holland. I had a question too, Ms. Mitchell. I appreciate your work and thorough overview on this. I feel sort of uniquely positioned to have this particular conversation around health because I have a master's in public health. And when I was doing that, I was specifically looking at youth and young adult suicidality in northern latitudes. On slide 4, you talked about Alaska leading the nation in youth suicide rate. And conversely to what many might intuit, suicide attempts actually increase in the spring and summer months, as opposed to times when it's getting darker in Alaska. But I am curious about this data because while that is true, we have a very, very unfortunately high suicide rate. How much of this is actually not just correlated, but directly related to the specifically daylight savings time spring forward effect versus when I had looked into this for my thesis, at least at that time, there was a whole lot of other reasons why these attempts increased in the spring and summer months. And daylight savings time was never mentioned as one of the prime reasons. So I really want to drill down at this. How much is daylight savings time the impact versus all the other things that come along with the vastly increasing light and change of pace in spring and summer? If you could speak to that.
Yes, so through the chair, thank you for the question. Again, I think it's difficult anytime a suicide is completed, we are very limited in our ability to assess what led to that event. And because the Alaska population is small, it's difficult to have statistically significant signals from a small numeric population. The data that I'm aware of related to suicide is from 2022. So that's US-based data. And that showed after that spring transition, there was a 6.25% increase in suicides related to that time shift. I don't think that it's possible to say with certainty that one particular suicide was related exclusively to a time change. But I think when we look at large populations and we see an increase in a signal in suicidality right after a shift in the time, that is something that I think we can pay attention to and probably draw some conclusions from.
Okay. And I, just as a follow-up, you know, I don't completely throw out correlational evidence, but when you say they're related, this is correlational evidence.
So through the chair, when we're looking at suicide rates throughout every week of the year, and there's a 6% increase in the week right after a time change, you're correct that we can't say that that's a cause. But when we don't see that increase in signal in other weeks of the year, and there's not another change at that week compared to the week prior or the week subsequent to that, I think that correlation tells us something powerful about the trends in the data.
Thank you.
It's not the sort of thing that one could do a randomized controlled trial. in people who were at risk for suicide and expose them to something that we thought might harm them. That just would not be an ethical study to do.
Of course. I wouldn't hope that would never happen. I just wanted to clarify that, Ms. Mitchell. And again, I don't totally throw out correlational data. It's just important to clarify that what we're looking at here in the data. And I guess my last follow-up on this is just, we've all through this hearing today and generally in this conversation, we talk about the spring forward. We don't talk really about the fall back. So is there any correlation related to health when we, in the fall, gain an hour of daytime? And can you, I would think with all these public health impacts and health impacts that we would see potentially corresponding, if it's daylight related versus lack of daylight related, that we would see some corresponding changes in the fall. Do we see that?
And through the chair, thank you for the question. That has been looked at and it doesn't balance out. So if there's a 6% increased risk in the spring, there is not a 6% decreased risk in the fall. And I think the way that that discrepancy is understood is partly the change in the loss of an hour of sleep has significant adverse health effects. And gaining an hour of sleep is not as detrimental to health as losing an hour of sleep. The question of how far west is a population in its circadian misalignment that's a biological plausibility argument. We don't see a strong signal in the fall in the way that we see that strong signal in the spring. So changing from standard time to daylight time has those increased circadian associated health risks, and switching back does not have an increased risk. It also doesn't have a dramatic health benefit.
Does it, just one last follow-up, does it have any health benefit that's noticeable or any correlational benefit?
I have to say I didn't prepare all of those numbers. I'm sorry, through the chair. I didn't prepare all of those numbers for the committee. I can do a little bit of research and hopefully have that information by later in the committee if you'd like me to look.
You could probably, if you would like to, Ms. Mitchell, follow up with the committee after the hearing, but I really appreciate you diving into that a little bit more. Do we have more questions for this testifier before we move on? Seeing none at this time. Thank you again, Ms. Mitchell. And again, as with other testifiers, if you are able to stay on, we'd be happy to have you here in case questions come up at the end. We'll go now to our next invited testifier who's in the room with us, Lisa Alexia. And we'll take just a very brief at ease for her to come up at ease. State Affairs is back on the record, and Ms. Alexia, if you'd like to go ahead and put yourself on the record, and please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chair Carrick, and members of the House State Affairs Committee. I am Lisa Alexia, for the record. Thank you for being here on a Saturday afternoon. I am an advocate of House Bill 229. As we've heard from Holland, we lost two time zones in 1983, and the sundial best aligns over Juneau. But during summer with daylight time, even Juneau is displaced farther west. And this displacement does have significant impacts on all of us, especially in Western Alaska, disproportionately so. The way I put it is that it constitutes an unconsented public health experiment for Western Alaska for all the reasons we were just discussing. I think it may play a role in suicide, and it certainly plays a role in limiting educational attainment. And I have, I believe, submitted some of those documents to Stuart. So this is a picture of St. Paul Island just before the end of daylight saving time on November 2nd, 2019. So St. Paul Island is at the same latitude as Juneau, but not the same longitude. They are at the far western end of our time zone, Alaska Standard Time. And so if you can imagine what it's like in Juneau on November 2nd at 10 a.m., it's not this. We all function best when we get enough sleep and what we need, but some Alaskans are waking in the dark to function, and that's a problem. The issue of ending daylight saving time has everything to do with giving people more morning light and the idea of moving to to a permanent daylight time worsens the morning darkness problem. So sleep deprivation with lack of morning light contributes to suicide, poor student test scores, car safety issues, higher rates of medical issues. Since 1983, Alaskans west of Yakutat have had three and a half hours of permanent daylight saving time. And so the idea of moving to another hour worse in the winter, putting Anchorage sunrise after 11 for 5 weeks, which is what it would happen if we were on permanent daylight time or permanent standard time, same difference, Pacific Standard Time and permanent daylight time are the same. Alaskan youth are especially sleepy because there's a circadian shift that happens for teenagers. So they want to stay up later and they wake up later. This is biology. It's not something we can fight. I'm going to skip through some of these. We got some of that. Okay, so my interest in this began in 2017. So some of the slides come from the work that a middle school project did. My kid was one of them, looking at the impact of school start time starting later and how that's tied in Alaska, where we are so displaced with our time zones. We need to start school later. As you can see from Dr. Mitchell's presentation, there's many medical associations. The CDC and the pediatrics all recommend that schools start after 8:30 in the morning. But the solar equivalent time for Alaska of 8:30 is often very different. So even Anchorage, where the high schoolers now start at 8:45, that is actually a solar equivalent time of much earlier than that. And I'll be on another slide. So protecting sleep by allowing kids to sleep in the morning improves learning. When schools delay the start of the school day, students do sleep more. Schools improve attendance, graduation, test scores, tardiness, sleeping in class, and car crashes decrease. House Bill 229 is congruent with starting school an hour later in the fall and the spring, which are some key times. SB 26, if it was approved by the federal DOT, would make students get up an hour earlier in the winter, essentially. The RAND Corporation found that a delay of school start times to 8:30, and they're looking at by the clock, would gain the U.S. economy $8.6 billion after just 2 years and $83 billion within a decade and more long term. So this is not a small issue. And while we can talk about the extremes of daylight in Alaska being a big deal, I think above the Arctic Circle, it's easier to argue that it doesn't matter, the west-east thing. But below the Arctic Circle, the west-east thing is a big deal. It's enough weeks of the year that it takes to respond to change. This spreadsheet was developed by that group of middle schoolers in consultation with a geographer to look at what solar equivalent school start times happen. You can say, well, let the schools adapt locally. The reality is that doesn't happen. It's kind of like seatbelt laws and vaccine laws. Good legislation provides for public health, public benefit, and looks at the larger picture. If you go west to east looking at this chart, you can see the solar equivalent school start times are very early. St. Paul Island, 4:55 a.m. on October 31st. In Anchorage, if we went on permanent daylight time, the solar equivalent would be 6:45 a.m. for the high schoolers. And that's after the 8:45 school start time they now have. So even though we adopted a later school start time, we would still benefit from permanent standard time. Protecting sleep will save lives. People think they want longer evenings, like they want to smoke, skip vaccines, and skip wearing a seatbelt. But there are public health and public safety and education issues at stake here. And this is St. Paul Island the next day, back on Alaska Standard Time. And that would go on, I would say, for probably 2 or 3 more weeks. I'd have to look up the specifics. But if you think about 2 or 3 weeks at either end of the season of having morning light to be awake by, there was a couple slides we got a little mixed up. I want to say, I had teachers tell me, oh my gosh, the parents are keeping the kids awake. They're not getting the kids to bed on time. They're sleeping in school. Well, again, it's a daylight shift. I had parents tell me that they couldn't get their kids to bed on time. Context for this is I'm a PA and former community health aide, and I've done a lot of work in Southwest Alaska. The thing that stays with my heart is remembering the mom. I asked her, well, how do you handle, I think it's, you know, far Southwest, how do you handle this year round? It's not even light before 10 o'clock in the morning. She says, oh, I take my kids to school. I go back home and I sleep another 2 hours. Kids need more sleep than mom does. How are they doing in the classroom? How are they learning? How are they behaving? And how does that affect mental health? And how does that affect the decision-making that leads to violent suicide rates, car crashes, all those things? And I think those are very good questions. And the last thing I want to say in response, if I may, to the chair, I have a paper, I believe I've submitted it, about longitude-based time zone partitions and rates of suicide in that first line of the abstract. Increasing evidence suggests that conditions with decreased morning light and decreased and increased evening light exposure, including shift work, daylight saving time, and eveningness, are associated with elevated mortality and suicide risk. So there is some research. Alaska State Department of Epidemiology did do some research about latitude, but none has been done about longitude. But there is evidence in the lower 48 that being at the far western end of a time zone does increase suicide risk. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here and coming down to Juneau. I know you made a long trip to get here and to go back. So thank you again for testifying, Ms. Alexia. We're going to go now to our next invited testifier, which is Cindy Kennard, who is also in the room with us. And Ms. Kennard, if you'd like to put yourself on the record, we can start the testimony. We'll just, there we go. Perfect.
Good afternoon. I'm Cindy Kiner, and I'm from Representative Holland's District 9. And good afternoon to everyone on the committee as well as the chair, Carrick. Testimony on circadian rhythm, sleep medicine, and brain health is giving verified data on negative impacts for mental, physical, and even economic health under daylight time. I have different issues to discuss about SP26 and HB229. There are several odd questions to consider for those issues. First, is each of us a kind, considerate, compassionate individual? At least most of the time. When we personally have to rise early for calls to some distant place or to make an O-Dark 30 flight, are we likely to be quiet and leave our families and neighbors peacefully asleep? Or would we wake our entire household and drive down our street with a horn blaring? If we have relatively frequent needs to connect to folks in a nearby time zone, what do we need to make that happen to our best benefit? Do we need everyone in the state of Alaska awake with us? Would that be like blaring our horns? And can we determine a likely number of folks needing frequent early connection with Seattle? It'd be dauntingly time-consuming to contact every Alaskan business to gather verifiable data on their early morning contact needs with Seattle or Pacific timers. However, we've found quick help. Data from numerous sources, such as the U.S. Census, Small Business Administration, and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, as well as various pertinent Alaska industries, is available. The full report is at a link in your packet, and data from that and its conclusions give us basis for the totality of early morning contact needs. Total businesses in Alaska number some 80 to 90,000, with 22,000 employer entities and 77,000 ranked as small businesses. Most businesses are small and locally based, likely having limited need to have early West Coast interactions. Those entities expected to have the most need involve shipping and logistics, California ports and markets, and national firms. The report notes, however, that a one-hour time difference allows pretty convenient connection without major disruption. For grins, let's take the largest figure the report offers, 90,000, on which to base our need data, and double it to allow for need by extra employees. That comes to 180,000 folks in Alaska who may frequently need to rise early to contact folks in Seattle. Compare that to the total population of 733,000, excuse me. If we subtract a very generous 180,000 folks who may frequently need to rise early for contact with folks in Seattle, Compare that to the total population of 733,000. If we subtract a very generous 180,000 as needing early rising, we leave 553,000 who normally haven't any cause to rise earlier than they would on current Alaska Standard Time. Does that seem like a lot of folks for us to wake up early every day for no reason? Could we consider letting 553,000 folks get a good night's rest closer to healthy solar time? Would we be kinder and gentler if we all set our alarm clocks for needed earlier waking? HB 229 gives an extra hour sleep to 553,000 Alaskans who are non-early risers. Wahoo! Well, let's wait and see. Could SB 26 have some good effect on our 553,000 fellow citizens? I think I'm supposed to click something, but I'm not sure what. Is it the up button?
The forward button.
Okay. Okay. Maybe it would be longer evening playtime light. Well, Anchorage, at 7 weeks out from our longest day, May 3rd and August 2nd, logs sunup time of at least 15 hours with civil twilight stretching over 17 hours of fine playtime light. Lastly, let's remember that our one time zone for all Alaskans, as has been discussed before, gives later sunsets to every part of Alaska all year round. For instance, in Mid-State, Anchorage and Fairbanks see about an extra hour of evening sun. Further west, Dillingham logs about an extra hour and a half. Thus, can we in good conscience claim any needed late evening light benefits for SB 26? And let's see. I think I'm supposed to do that again, right? Nope, that didn't work. Oh, that way. I'm sorry. I think we've already seen this slide. But finally, this reliable statewide poll shows an average 74% of the state's voting population want off daylight time and on year-round standard time. The caveat here is it failed to ask folks' views on being on daylight time year-round. All the same, my poll results, standard time long daylight stats, and the huge number of folks to be saved from early waking leave HB 229 looking like our overall best bet for our healthy citizens and economics. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kinard, and sorry I mispronounced your name at the beginning.
You know, it's happened a million times in a million different ways.
Well, I appreciate your testimony. We are going to move to our final invited testifier. Just given time, we will open it up if there's any brief questions, but I do want to get to public testimony after that. And so I'd like to, at this time, welcome our final invited testifier on HB 229, Kathy Giardo. Hoping I'm saying that right, from the Alaska Psychiatric Association, who is also in the room with us. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Giardo.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak here. I am Dr. Kathy Giardo. I am a double board certified psychiatrist in child psychiatry as well as adult psychiatry, and I have a PhD in neurosciences. I am here as a scientist and a physician, and would like to help you see the data, which my colleagues have already done a beautiful job for, so I think this is going to be easy for me. But just to give you an opportunity to see it, what the peer-reviewed data says in the medical and the science journals. I have no conflict of interest. As we've already heard, every person has a biological clock. The circadian rhythm, which runs 24-hour cycle, and morning light is the master switch. Okay, having a certain amount of daylight is different from timing of that light, and we're talking about the timing here, which is so critical. Morning light, as it comes into our eyes, increases serotonin. It resets our cortisol system. Our mood improves. We become alert, which our children we know definitely need for school. It gives us peak alertness as the day goes on, and then melatonin at night and evening darkness winds down our system. This cycle is something that we cannot get away from when it comes to the shift or daylight saving time. What we get when we do that shift is circadian misalignment. It shifts the clock an hour forward, but our body stays anchored physiologically to the sun. So for 1 to 3 weeks, our biological rhythm and daily schedule are out of sync. This disrupts serotonin, dopamine production. It activates our stress response system. That's what we call the HPA axis. And it fragments sleep architecture. All of these pathways are linked to depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, and psychosis. Point here is that at the very bottom, you see psychiatric hospitalizations also spike. There's a 3 to 6% in mood-related hospital admissions the week after spring forward. Sleep, as you heard earlier from our sleep specialist, is the key. Americans lose an average of 40 minutes of sleep the night the clocks spring forward. Sleep loss triggers elevated cortisol, reduced immune function, impaired glucose regulation, and our stress response hyperactivation. This results in acute issues as well as chronic issues. So when we change to change the clocks, there are the acute phase issues from that transition, but our physiology doesn't adapt. It stays on a delayed phase. That's part of the key. And I would bring that back to, we can, if we have time, to talk about the suicide data and depression data in adolescence and where that was done over a 7-year period in Russia. There's only 4 countries that have tried daylight savings time. All 4 have reverted out of that because of extreme unhappiness by the population and the health effects. The UK in 68 to 71, the US had a 2-year plan to do this from 73 to 75. It was repealed only 1 year later because it just wasn't working. And then Portugal did this from, I want to say, 4 or 5 years back in the 90s, maybe 92 to 96. And then Russia tried this from 2011 to 2014. And there is some significant health data from all of those things. Nobody that tried to daylight savings time stayed on it. And even though we're talking about changing the time zone to PST, that's a functionally the same thing as DST. This has already been alluded to by colleagues. What does this mean for Alaska? In Alaska, seasonal affective disorder affects 10 to 20% of Alaskans versus the national rate of 5%. Okay, this has to do fundamentally with suppressing serotonin production, triggering or worsening depressive episodes. Some of the significant data that we have is from the Scandinavian countries, the 31-year Finnish registry that found that bipolar admissions for patients with bipolar disorder increased by 10%. And it had to do not specifically with DST, but the photo periods, which coincide with the changes during spring and fall. What we're saying is that, you know, the solution is standard time and it protects mood. It preserves the morning sunrise year-round. It drives serotonin synthesis and it stabilizes melatonin onset. Briefly, suicide risk and attempts go up in variable light seasons, in specifically with bipolar disorder. And other disorders as well, but that one is a clear statistic. And this rate is even higher when you have a what we call insulation ratio, when that's extreme, as Alaska is the one example in all of the U.S., where the amount of incoming solar radiation is very different because of the extremes and the amount of light and the amount of dark that we have. People with anxiety disorders and psychiatric disorders in general generally have a delayed chronotype, and they're at a much higher risk of negative outcomes from the change. We've already heard that children are vulnerable. Developmentally, their brains are in a more vulnerable position, and it's something that we really need to be considering, as we've already heard. This is very significant when it comes to psychosis. The circadian disruption is a core feature of all psychotic disorders. It has to do with the connection in some ways with some specific genes that are involved with our circadian rhythm. So definitely nothing that is trivial. Psychiatric admissions go up and symptoms worsen when it comes to the stress effect on our circadian rhythm system, which affects our stress response. We've already heard about the cumulative health burden from the issues. And more than, well, I would say, I think it's closer to 20 major medical and scientific organizations have formally endorsed permanent standard time. I just have a listing here. The AMA, I think, said it best. Research shows permanent daylight saving time overlooks potential health risks, risks that can be avoided by establishing permanent standard time instead. I do want to make a comment. I should have changed the last block there. Says the American Psychiatric Association. That was my error. It does not have a formal position at this point. It has lots of documentation and peer-reviewed data that strongly support the concern, but there is no formal position there. But there are a number of other organizations that I could have listed here that would have signed on. So some propose permanent daylight time instead. From the medical community, as we've heard, the consensus is really for permanent standard time as opposed to permanent daylight time. There are health effects for both. We do see that. The difference is that the permanent standard time shows more consistent health benefits and is the much superior benefit when you look at those studies. And that's all. I would take questions now.
Excellent. Thank you so much for testifying today. I do want to maintain these last 15 to 20 minutes for our public testifiers, and I just want to really thank you, Dr. Gallardo. How do you say it again?
Gallardo's fine.
Gallardo's
fine. Dr. G, it just
Dr. Gallardo, thank you. Thank you very much for testifying. And committee members will have the contact for all of these invited testifiers, and so I would just encourage folks to please follow up with them for additional questions, and we can always have them call in to future hearings. So at this time, I am going to open public testimony again on both SB 26 and HB 229. So we're opening public testimony on both bills at this time. And I'm going to ask that our testifiers please contain your remarks to somewhere between 2 and 3 minutes at a maximum so that we can get to everybody today. And thank you all very much for your patience. At this time, I'd like to go first to the Wrangell LIO. We have two testifiers there, and we'll start with David Rack.
Hello, my name is David Rack, and I represent myself today. I live in Wrangell, Alaska, and I oppose the elimination of daylight savings time in Alaska if that is the sole proposed legislative action. My wife and I first moved to Sitka, Alaska in 1977, and we have lived in Wrangell since 1980. I remember enjoying the spring, summer, and fall daylight during the years prior to the Alaska time zone consolidation. In 1983, then-Governor Bill Sheffield petitioned the U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Elizabeth Dole to merge Alaska's four time zones into two. Alaska moved to the new Alaska time zone 1 hour earlier than Pacific time. This is the very inconvenient and unnatural situation that we in Southeast Alaska have had to deal with ever since. I ask that you act to resolve that issue. Please understand, as previously explained, that time zones are established for the convenience of commerce, and a standard time zone covers a 15-degree band of longitude. In Southeast Alaska, our commerce is predominantly with Seattle. Our commercially preferred and correct solar time would be very close to Pacific time. Currently, we approach our solar correct time each year only during the daylight savings time. Addressing the Alaska time zone consolidation, Representative Holland posted in October of 2025, and I quote, "We currently have a single time standard across a 2,400-mile span that permanently shifted much of Alaska more than an hour off its solar time and a healthy alignment with our natural circadian rhythm and the healthy benefits humans enjoy from living on a schedule more natural to the place they live. We do have extremes of light and dark here in Alaska, making the issue of time zones hard to debate around the winter and summer solstices. But for the rest of the year, it matters. And the time zone change arbitrarily in March has its consequences. Personally, it's not a big inconvenience to change my clock twice a year to achieve being closer to the correct mentally natural healthy solar time for at least part of the year. If changing the clock is the issue to people, I would prefer and support a change to year-round daylight savings time in Alaska. This change would allow Southeast Alaska to be closer to its natural healthy solar time. I would also support moving all of Alaska to Pacific Standard Time for the same reason. Thank you for your consideration, David Rack."
Thank you, Mr. Rack, and thank you for your patience to testify today. We're going to stay with the Wrangell LIO for a moment and go now to Rosemary Ruoff.
My name is Rosemary Ruoff. I'm a resident of Wrangell for 51 years. I've already submitted what I have to say, basically, don't mess with the clocks. But I would like to add to that the thought that whatever is decided, I wish for Alaska to be all on the same time zone, the entire state on the same time zone statewide. That's all I wish to say. It's a very short.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ruoff, for calling to testify. And again, thank you for your patience today. I know we have a couple folks in the room as well. We're going to stay online for just a moment and go to Adam Grove in Anchorage.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Carrick and members of the committee. My name is Adam Grove. I am testifying on behalf of myself. I'm a naturopathic doctor in Anchorage, and I wanted to just give you a little bit of what this might be like, how it affects my patients. My practice is focused primarily on treating those with traumatic brain injury, which is a big deal in Alaska. We have twice the national level of brain injury in Alaska and three times in our First Nations folks. And I'm a brain injury survivor myself. And I also started a nonprofit, and I travel the state in a bus called the Alaska Brain Bus. And I've spoken to hundreds of Alaskans over the thousands of miles I've driven in the last 3 years. And to a T, every brain injury person I speak to struggles with time, struggles with sleep. The statistics show anywhere from 50 to 70% of people's TBI struggle with circadian rhythm disorders and sleep cycle difficulties. And I see that pan out. And I just wanted to give you two stories of two patients. This came up. I also run an online support group. One of these stories came from that, and one is a patient that I see in person. And so I just wanted to give you these stories because there's a lot of debate about, well, does research from the lower 48 have, is it relevant to Alaska? So these are Alaskans, right? The first, we're going to call him John. He's an Army veteran with a past history of several traumatic brain injuries from improvised explosive devices that were deployed when he was serving in Afghanistan. He lives in Eagle River. He is on disability as a result of those injuries. And I spoke to him the week after daylight saving time, the time switch happened, and he had not left the house in a week. He canceled all of his therapy appointments for the week because he was exhausted. He had endless headache, lasted all day. I woke up with it in the morning. He was confused, and he just felt like he wasn't safe to drive or to participate in his therapies. The next is Stephanie. I saw her in my office. She's a state employee who fell on the ice 6 months ago, and she didn't have the choice not to go to work like John. She went to work Monday morning after the time change with a headache, exhausted, and with extreme light and sound sensitivity, which is a common symptom after brain injury, and she had to go home early. She missed 3 half-days of work that week because she couldn't bear to be around the lights and sounds of work, and she even couldn't stand to be around the noise of her young children at home, and she sequestered herself in the bedroom for the remainder of that week. And she feels like her progress and cognitive rehabilitation was set back by several weeks. So these are just 2 examples of the importance of something that maybe a lot of us take for granted. It might be inconvenient. It's not inconvenient for these people. It's extremely disruptive. And these are people with disabilities. And if this was a workplace situation, I would be filing ADA, American Disability Act, accommodation request with their bosses to change this, because this puts them at a disadvantage. They can't enjoy life like the rest of us. And so it's just a dimension that maybe you haven't considered. So I'm very much in favor of House Bill 229, because certainly changing somebody's time by 1 hour might not be a big deal for a lot of us. But for these people, it's a huge and life-changing event, and it puts them at a severe disadvantage. And permanent standard time is important because that aligns with solar time, and that helps establish good wake-sleep cycles for these folks. So thank you, and I appreciate you addressing this issue. And on behalf of the people that I see and myself, I appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. Thank you very much for calling in and waiting to testify today. I am going to just remind our remaining testifiers to please try to keep the testimony to between about 2 and 3 minutes. We can definitely get through everybody's testimony today, but that would be helpful. I'm going to go now to Charlie Arnson in Ketchikan.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Carrick and honorable members of the committee. I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Charlie Arnson, and I serve on the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly. I'm here to voice strong support for Senate Bill 26, which would end the twice-yearly clock change and keep Alaska on a consistent time standard. For communities like Ketchikan, this is not a small issue. Twice a year, we ask every Alaskan to abruptly shift their internal clock. And as stated today, public health research shows these transitions disrupt sleep, increase accidents and heighten stress, effects already especially pronounced in Southeast Alaska, all over Alaska, where our daylight swings are already dramatic. We don't need an artificial disruption layered on top of the natural one. Local governments see the consequences firsthand. Schools report dips in student alertness and attendance in the days following the time change. Employers see more fatigue-related errors. Public safety agencies experience increased calls. These are real, measurable impact on our communities and potentially avoidable. The economic benefits of ending the shift of the time clock include impacts to our tourism industry, our maritime sector, and transportation networks, which rely on predictable scheduling. Eliminating clock changes reduces confusion for visitors, improves coordination with ferry and airline operations, and supports businesses that work across time zones. Our community is in such support of this, we have put together Resolution 3161, which I emailed to the committee there so that you can review the Assembly support of Senate Bill 26. On a lighter note, our household pets would also appreciate the change too. Anyone who has ever fed a dog or a cat on a routine knows they don't understand why dinner suddenly comes an hour earlier or later. It's also important to recognize that Alaska is not acting in isolation. British Columbia has already taken steps to end seasonal clock changes, aligning their time policy with the preferences of residents and regional partners. For Southeast Alaska, where our economic, cultural, and transportation ties with BC are strong, maintaining compatibility with our closest neighbor is both practical and beneficial. I'm trying to hurry it up.
skip in a paragraph here. Ultimately, Senate Bill 26 offers a practical, widely supported solution. It positions Alaska for healthier, safer, and more efficient daily life while aligning us with regional partners who have already moved in this direction. On behalf of the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly and the community I represent, I respectfully urge you to advance Senate Bill 26. Ending the clock change is a small legislative action with meaningful benefits for Alaskans across the state. I really thank you for your time, your work through this committee, and your work on behalf of all Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arnson, and thank you for your work with the Ketchikan Borough. And at this time, we'll go one more online, and then we'll come in the room and then finish out with the rest of folks online. I'd like to go to Cam Webb in North Pole.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Cam Webb. I live in North Pole, and I'm representing myself. I'm very glad to see the Senate may soon take action to end the practice of changing our clocks twice each year. Social and economic disruption this causes is widely recognized, and I am grateful to the authors of both bills for proposing to end this practice. I do, however, have strong opinions about which time zone Alaska settles on for its permanent time. SB 26 would have us move to Pacific Standard Time at Greenwich Mean Time, GMT, minus 8 hours, while HB 229 would leave us on current Alaska Standard Time at GMT, minus 9 hours. I endorse the latter, HB 229, and ask that SB 26 be dropped or voted against. The alignment of clock time to solar time is fundamentally important. Frequently each day, I orientate myself using clock time and the position of the sun, whether I'm driving or walking on the land. Ideally, the sun would be due east at 6 a.m., south at noon, and due west at 6 p.m. Many people in the world enjoy this sensible and healthy arrangement, and their body clocks are in sync with the world around them. Most Alaskans are not so lucky. Those living in Anchorage and Fairbanks never have the sun to the east at 6 a.m., but instead it's 7 a.m. in the winter and 8 a.m. in the summer. Our time zone in central states should really be GMT minus 10 hours, the same as Hawaii, as it was from 1918 to 1983. SB 26 would have interior residents driving to work in the dark for an extra month each year. It would have us live our lives permanently 2 hours out of sync with the sun and the stars. This choice represents yet another salvo in the ongoing divorce by tech-obsessed humans from the natural world. HB 229, while not a bill to restore the optimal time zone of GMT minus 10, is far better than SB 26. And I urge you to please support HB 229 until it's passed as law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Webb. Really appreciate you waiting and calling in today to testify. We'll go now in the room to Tom Williams. Thank you for joining us, and also thank you for your patience today to get to public testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Williams. I'm a 49-year resident of Juneau. I'm here representing three entities. Ward Air, my employer. We're an on-demand air charter that provides a year-round service to businesses, and we also provide tourism and more activity during the summer. I also, with my wife, operate a vacation rental to which we cater to visitors here in Juneau. And I'm representing myself as far as an individual who enjoys, very much enjoys the late hours of our summer. I'm here to testify in favor, strongly in favor, for all those entities, of SB 26, and strongly oppose House Bill 229. First of all, House Bill 20 or SB 26 changes our time from the existing scenario that we're on for only 4 months, the winter months. SB or House Bill 299 changes it for 8 months because it takes us to essentially, it gets rid of daylight savings time. Both bills are important in as much as they get rid of the dreaded clock change, and the biggest health benefit that we'll see is that change. And I don't think there's any argument about that. You know, 2/3 to 3/4 of Alaskans, depending on which poll you agree with, support that. Representative Holland, in his testimony earlier today, said that in 1983, there were three critical elements for the consolidation of the time zone across Alaska. One was coordination, second was communication, and third was commerce. We've lived with that and benefited from that consolidation for the past 43 years. I think it's important, that we not change that. And it's not just coordination within Alaska and communication and again commerce. Our commerce is deeply rooted in the people from the lower 48 as well as foreign countries. And I think to make a significant change to 8 months of the year during the summer, our critical seasonal commerce time, would be very detrimental for the reason expressed by the Alaska Tourism Group earlier, as well as several of the speakers. You know, we've adjusted to the change that we made, this consolidation that we made back 43 years ago. People have lived with that for 43 years. We're not suffering a great deal from that. We've adjusted. If we get rid of the time change, that'll be the biggest help. In short, Senate Bill 26 essentially makes Alaska daylight time year-round, which is what I've testified for Senate Bill 6 and over the years to several of in every committee that I can remember in support of it doing that. But it does it in a very good way, a very clever way, and I give Senator Merrick a great number of kudos for that. And it actually has support. That is another critical element. I believe that if you were to pass SB 26 out of the House, that the governor will actually sign it. I think it's very unlikely that House Bill 29, well-intentioned, and there's lots of good arguments for their position, will even make it out of the legislature. So the question is, do you want to get something done, or do you want to make good arguments? SB 26 isn't the perfect solution, but it's a very good solution. It solves the problem, does not make a huge disruption to our clocks, other than the the 4 months of the year, November, December, January, and February. And I will tell you, as testified earlier, they asked a question about winter activities. And from the Ward Air's perspective and Charter Air Service, having more daylight in the evening is a benefit not only to us who fly our customers, but to agencies and that we fly, whether they're state agencies or businesses. They're much more likely to be able to conduct their business with more time later in, or more sunlight later in the wintertime. So it's definitely a commercial benefit. So I urge the committee to support SB 26, pass it out of committee, and support it on the floor. I thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Williams, and appreciate you waiting to testify, and would welcome you, as you are here in Juneau, to please join us for any future hearings as you're able to. I am also going to welcome Craig Jennison here in the room from Douglas. Welcome.
I'm Craig Jennison. I'm the Vice President of Temsco Helicopters. Temsco is an Alaska-based company from Ketchikan. We also have tour operations here in Juneau, in Skagway, and in Denali. We are a VFR, or Visual Flight Reference Operation, meaning that we can only operate our aircraft between the hours of sunrise and sunset. Our tours run in the summer months only, starting 1st of May and running through the end of September. With the current Alaska Daylight Savings Time, we start losing our late-day departures by August 21st, as sunset moves earlier each day. By mid-September, we've lost several of our late-day departures. While sunrise is early enough throughout the summer, we are unable to launch flights before 8 a.m. for a number of reasons. So adjusting our schedule earlier to make up for those late-day losses is not an option for us. If House Bill 229 were to pass, taking an hour away from our existing schedule, the effects would be devastating. Our operation would have to cut an estimated 200 departures. That translates into the loss of over 5,000 passengers and the negative impacts cascade from there. This would mean a cut not only in hours to our own employees, but to the many partner businesses that we rely on as well. Ours is just one of countless other Southeast visitor industry businesses that would be negatively impacted. It's not just flight operations, but all tours that rely on daylight. It's really hard to show off Alaska at night. Senate Bill 26, as I understand it, is the less impactful option for summer businesses like ours. By eliminating daylight savings while moving us to Pacific Standard Time would keep us on the same summer timeline as we have now. Thank you, Chair, for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you for testifying, Mr. Jennison, and for your patience as we get to public testimony. We have three more testifiers who are all online, it would appear. And so at this time, I'd like to go to JP, who's calling in from Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Yes. Hello, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mr. JP. First name is J-A-Y. Last name is P-E-A. I'm the president of the nationwide nonprofit Safe Standard Time. I'm also the co-chair for the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time, representing the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the American Academy of Sleep Technologists, the American College of Chest Physicians, the National Sleep Foundation, the Society for Research on Biological Rhythms, and the Society, the Sleep Research Society. Our request today is to oppose Senate Bill 26, that it would be worse than the status quo, and to support House Bill 229, that it would improve upon the status quo. Much of what I would want to say today has already been said by Drs. Gallardo, Grove, Mitchell, and Webb, and Ms. Alexia and Ms. Kinard. So I'll try to be abbreviated in what else I have to say. But Senate Bill 26 would extend daylight saving time permanently into winter. It would add a month of dark mornings to your every single year, and it would make the morning darkness last an hour longer every morning in many cities, in Anchorage, pushing sunrise from in January 10 in the morning to 11 in the morning, in Fairfax from 11 in the morning to noon. It would push the sunrise even to 1 in the afternoon. It's a very strange idea to have a sunrise in the afternoon. That doesn't actually make quite sense. If you were to poll Alaskans, do you want to go to work 1 hour earlier all of the winter, they would probably say no. When this has been tried in other countries, it has significantly increased seasonal depression disorder and car accidents. And there's no guarantee that the Senate bill would be approved. It could lock the state into waiting a long time for nothing to happen. The DOT, when I spoke to them in 2021, was not interested in this. And just last year, Senator Dan Sullivan voted against permanent daylight time in Senate Commerce Committee. On the other hand, the House bill brings your clocks in closer alignment to the natural sun. It balances the morning light, which is very important for school children, commuters, construction, farmers, fishermen, skiers, search and rescue, and traders with the Asian markets. Many states are looking at permanent standard time now, including California, Minnesota, Illinois, and New York. Polling is showing most Americans actually prefer standard time, not daylight time. And again, it is federally pre-approved. So I would ask that you would please consider the one guaranteed way, the one healthy, safe way to ditch the switch, as most people want. No on Senate Bill 26 and yes on House Bill 229. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. P, for calling in. And we'll next go to Susie Crosby in Wasilla.
Thank you. People want no on Senate Bill 26 and yes on House Bill 229. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. P, for calling in. And we'll next go to Ms. Crosby, you are unmuted, and I think there's just a delay, so feel free to start talking.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Okay. All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. I live in Wasilla, Alaska, and I just want to point out that anyone who has was born after 1975 or moved to Alaska after 1983, which was myself, 1983, doesn't remember a time when sunset fell without sunset falling, times falling between like about 10 and 11:30 from the 1st of May to the middle of August. And if those sunsets suddenly come an hour earlier than what they've known all their lives, there will be shockwaves when the realization hits home. The greatest impact that I see in going to HB 229 and staying on standard time, most Alaskans won't even comprehend this until it's too late. And that's the forfeiture of 238 hours of evening daylight over the course of the 34 weeks of daylight savings time. In exchange for having that hour of daylight chopped off of every evening from spring through fall, we'll get an extra hour of light in the morning, starting on average between 3:30 and 5 a.m., which is a time when 90% of Alaskans are asleep. And to, you know, there's been several comments about, well, we wake up because of the light. Most Alaskans use blackout curtains. And I mean, we wake up in the dark in the winter anyway, and we use blackout curtains in the morning. So we wake up because the alarm says to, and then we will walk out of our darkened bedroom. Then we move on with our day and adjust ourselves. And I have to say that I know I'm in the minority in saying this, but I don't care whether we set our clocks spring and fall or not. That does not bother me in the slightest. The one thing that would bother me the most would be the loss of that summer evening daylight and having that cut short by an hour. We farm, and that would be a severe impact because a lot of what we do is in the evening. And I also am very involved in the Alaska State Fair. I'm not speaking on behalf of the fair, but I will say that if darkness came an hour early, it would be devastating to the State Fair, which is my home base, but also to any evening activity, whether it's a concert or, you know, even a picnic or a bike ride. And it's not going to be an effect that won't be noticed so much right at solstice, but in April and May and July and August, it'll be pretty severe change, as some others have pointed out. Currently the sun sets around, it's going to set right around 8:45 on Labor Day. And a 7:45 sunset on Labor Day, if that HB 229 were to pass, would be just a crushing blow for anyone in the tourist industry or who enjoys a summer evening. And I do want to state for the record that I don't consider summer evening recreation and staying out late on a beautiful summer evening to be in the same ballpark as smoking, not wearing a seatbelt, or not vaccinating, as one of the testifiers mentioned. I think it's absolutely critical to the health of Alaskans to be able to go out after their work day or after their school day or whatever it is that takes up our daytime and be able to have that summer evening recreation. Others have also mentioned that for 2/3 of the year, we would now be 5 hours off of the East Coast. That would affect a lot of people that I know, including myself. I make a lot of phone calls already to the East Coast, and I have to remember to make those phone calls by noon, or I will have to wait for another day. And to be another hour off the East Coast would be a real impact. So I want to express my extreme support for SB 26 and my extreme opposition to HB 229. And please, if we're going to make this change, let us keep our summer evenings. That's what keeps us all going through those long, dark winters, is waiting for our beautiful summer evenings. And I honestly don't know one single person who would say, oh, yippee, it's daylight at 3:30 in the morning. Let's all get up and go do something exciting out in our hour of daylight. Leave that hour of daylight where the majority of people can get the most use out of it. So I think that's, the time zone consolidation in 1983, that definitely put Western Alaska at a severe, it put both sides of the state, east and west, at a disadvantage. It made sunset times in the east part, southeast Alaska, much an hour earlier, and it put Western Alaska into a very late sunrise. maybe we should consider putting one more time zone to accommodate the residents of Western Alaska. And that's all I have. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Crosby, and thank you for waiting today very patiently to testify. Our last testifier today is Lynn Willis in Eagle River. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello. Oh, hi. My name is Lynn Willis. I'm calling from Eagle River, and I'm speaking for myself. We've all heard the arguments for and against this for years and years. What I would like to see is a two-step approach. First, stop the clock changing, and then let us have a healthy debate about time zone. That last testifier stumbled on something, which is Alaska is too wide and too long to get into one time zone. It's not working very well. Now, in your bill, in SB 26, you say that conditional effect of this section takes effect only if the U.S. DOT places all of the state within the Pacific Standard Time Zone on or before January 1st, 2035. That's 9 years from now. And what are you doing about the Aleutians? They're not in the Alaska Standard Time Zone. They're in the Hawaiian Aleutian Time Zone. And are you going to make them join this new, brand new, even bigger time zone? I think you need to talk about that. But my argument is, without getting into all the details, and I've argued about this for years and years, is let us have a two-step solution. First, stop the clock changing, and that would motivate people then to have a serious debate about time zones involving the federal government. And I believe the DOT would have to come here and hold hearings, and you would have to go through that process. But in the meantime, we would get this rock out of our collective shoe. It's an antiquated process, practice that just doesn't need to be observed anymore. God knows we've got enough stress in our life. That's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. And at this time, do we have anyone else in the room for public testimony? Seeing none, seeing no one else online for public testimony. Just wanted to thank everybody for your patience today as we work to get to public testimony. At this time, we are closing public testimony on SB 26 and HB 229. And that concludes our business for House State Affairs today. Thank you to our committee members and staff for being here on a Saturday, as well as our bill presenters. And Senator Merrick, thank you for joining us in House State Affairs today. Part of the reason we held this hearing on a Saturday was to ensure that public testifiers would have maximal opportunity to be here. So I appreciate all those that were able to call in. We will be setting these two bills aside. Our next meeting is on Tuesday, March 31st at 3:15. At this time, the agenda for that hearing is to hear the final of three options presented in the legislature on this subject. We'll have House Bill 41, also on daylight savings time, from Representative Allard before us, as well as continuing discussion on HB 214, SR 22 insurance from Representative Galvin, and a first hearing on HB 213 on data sharing from Representative Jimmy. And with nothing else before House State Affairs, we are adjourned at 5:28 p.m.